And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, we're going to welcome Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics back to Midday. Jeff comes by from time to time to talk about the latest issues in medical ethics. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about the thorny issues around assisted suicide and new regulations concerning people who participate in medical research. So I hope you can join us tomorrow right here on Midday. Now it's time for another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Today, we're actually going to be talking about the role of religion in the not quite public sphere. My guests are two Lutheran pastors who bring their ministries to Maryland prisons. The Reverend Gary Rickle is the pastor at St. Dismas, a Lutheran community in the Maryland prison system. The Reverend Susan Beck is the interim pastor at the Shepherd of the Glen Lutheran Church in Glenwood. She works with Gary Rickle in his prison ministry. Welcome to you both. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate being here.
And joining us on the line from WAMU in Washington is Dr. Jerome Kapulski. He's a scholar in residence at American University who has taught religion courses in the Goucher Prison Education Program in Maryland prisons. Dr. Kapulski, welcome.
Delighted to be here.
So, Susan Beck, let me start with you, or Gary Rickle, let me start with you, if you wouldn't mind. Tell us about St. Dismas, this community. As I understand it, one of the things that's distinguished about it is that there's no building, there's no Church of St. Dismas, you know, on a GPS anywhere.
From the pastor's point of view, that's a real joy because I don't have to put up with a building. But 32 years ago, in 1985, the Lutheran Church decided to do something brand new and unique. They literally started a congregation inside the prison walls. This was the first place and the first time in the United States, and it happened in Jessup, Maryland, with MCIW, the women's prison, and MCIJ. 32 years later, I'm the seventh pastor, and now we are in five different places in the state.
So you then travel from prison to prison, or do you have other clergy who are doing programs in places other than the one where you do it?
I try to visit each one once a month. We conduct worship services and have other volunteers in each place, like Pastor Susan, who goes in and conducts worship services.
And the worship services are conducted on Sundays, like regular church, or are they at different times? How's that work?
No, sir. We go in when the state tells us we can go in. So, for instance, at the women's prison in Jessup, services are on Saturday evening. At the men's prison in Jessup, Friday evening. Each of them, though, start at about 7 o'clock.
And where do they take place?
There's a designated room. We really are not in a chapel in any of the facilities. We're in a concrete room with tile on the roof and linoleum floors that make up each room. So, yeah, there's no real chapel to speak of.
And Pastor Susan Beck, what's your impression of the worship services that you've been involved in? I guess you're somewhat new to this kind of ministry. Is that right?
Somewhat new, yes. I think Gary invited me to join this ministry. I guess it was last spring. Took a little while to get vetted and get in, and I think it was maybe June when I started. Oh my goodness, my impression is that this is probably the most spirit-filled worship that I think anyone could participate in. I think that's sort of a hallmark of Christianity, that you find God where you might not find, where you might not expect. But people come to the worship services. The incarcerated men come to the worship services out of real need and out of their choice. And they bring with them that spirit of need that's so that really feeds us as pastors, when we pronounce an absolution, when there's confession and absolution, that's part of every service, and we declare to you that your sins are forgiven. They break out in big smiles. That's wonderful. That's the heart of our faith. So there's a wonderful spirit there.
So the needs of your congregants in the prison system, what are the ways in which those needs diverge or are different from the needs of your congregation outside the walls Shepherd of the Glen.
As a congregational pastor, as a parish pastor, as Gary said, there's a lot. There's the building to take care of. There's the administrative issues of, you know, the making sure that the furnace is working and the light bulbs are changed and a lot of administrative things. This is a blessing to be able to come into a venue, come into a context, and hold a worship service anywhere. We don't always know where we're going to be, but wherever we are, God is present, and that's really wonderful. I think the biggest difference is that people who are incarcerated have a very keen awareness of their need for forgiveness and their need to turn their lives around and that transformational quality that's at the heart of Christianity. They know it's concrete for them.
And Dr. Jerome Kapolsky, you've been part of the Goucher Prison Education Program. That's a program I'm pretty familiar with. I did a big story about that a couple of years ago. I spent a day at both the women's and men's facility in Jessup attending classes. Tell us about the classes that you've taught there.
Well, I taught classes at both those facilities, both at the men's and the women's facility. And the class I taught was Introduction to the Hebrew Bible, which is a set of texts known to Christians as the Old Testament and to Jews as Tanakh. And my approach was to teach these books from a academic scholarly perspective and not from a religious perspective. So speaking not to their own immediate religious needs, but trying to understand these books, what they meant to the people who composed them and read them in the ancient world.
So yours was not a worship service. Yours was an academic course studying Hebrew scripture.
Indeed. And, you know, I should say at the outset that, you know, it's very easy for me to sit here and say we bracketed out the students' own religious commitments and concerns from the course, but that wouldn't be entirely correct. Students came with a variety, from a variety of different traditions. Many students had found a tradition or engaging a tradition in prison. I had a number of Muslim students in my men's class, and at certain times during the semester, they would have to step out of the class for prayer. So religion was, you know, involved in what we were doing, even if it wasn't the primary goal.
And Pastor Gary Rickle, are your services Lutheran services or are they interfaith?
They are sponsored by the Lutheran Church. I describe them as mainline Protestant. Very few people that come are actually Lutheran. Most of the people probably come are nothing, but they come because they feel now is the time they have an encounter with God. So no Muslims or Jews or anything like that. It's uniquely Christian.
It's uniquely Christian. And Susan Beck, I guess you've been involved in some interfaith services. You work with an Orthodox rabbi named Rabbi Tobesman, who has been working in the prison system for many years. Describe those services and who's attending those.
Oh, that was great. I connected with Rabbi Tobesman because he's had 30-some years of interfaith experience, and it's a passion of mine. So we've talked about it, and he was one who proposed, "Hey, let's do an interfaith service here in the prison." So we did. We scheduled it once. It had to be rescheduled because of some administrative things, but the service ended up being more ecumenical than interfaith. All the congregants were people of different Christian stripes. But there's a lot of stripes in Christianity, a lot of differences. So that was beautiful in and of itself. Rabbi Tobesman brought in a wonderfully Orthodox Jewish style and tone. We emphasized this was, it was around Thanksgiving. The theme was gratitude. And we emphasized how our different traditions view gratitude. We had the men share. And we celebrated the diversity of points of view. We had a diversity of points of view. We had racial diversity, ethnic diversity. At one point, one of the men shared how the brothers there were doing this and that. And I said, wait a minute, we have racial diversity, we have ethnic diversity, we have religious diversity with Rabbi Tobesman, and we have gender diversity because I'm here and I'm the only female in the room. So it was really a wonderful evening of of learning from each other and celebrating our mutual values.
And Dr. Jerome Kapolsky, in your classes, did people talk about the differences in their religious traditions, using as a springboard their reading of Hebrew scripture? I mean, did the worship practice of Islam or Judaism or Christianity come up in the course of your class discussions?
It certainly did, and I should say that I had students who were Muslims, students who were Jews, different varieties and denominations of Christianity, Asian traditions, and even some very staunch agnostics and atheists. And their engagement with the text and the questions of the class itself happened almost on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. One example I can give you was many of the men, as I mentioned, who had converted to Islam were studying Arabic and studying the Quran and were fascinated by the ways in which a narrative in the Hebrew Bible, say the story of Noah, would be taken up and transformed in the Quran, and also interested in the way in which the cognate of Hebrew and Arabic words that they were learning. So they brought to the class what they were, their own sort of intellectual and devotional experiences with Islam. And I saw similar things with students who are Christians and Jews and other traditions as well.
Dr. Jerome Kapolsky is a scholar in residence at American University who joins us from the studio of WAMU Radio. The Reverend Susan Beck is the pastor at the Shepherd of the Glen Church in Glenwood, and the Reverend Gary Rickle is the pastor of a Lutheran community called St. Dismas, a ministry in Maryland prisons. It's Living Questions here on Midday. It's our monthly series exploring the role of religion in the public sphere. I'm Tom Hall. We welcome your questions and comments when we come back from a little break. 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. What do you think about the fact that prisoners in the state of Maryland have the option and opportunity to attend services while in prison? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that that starts to blur the line between the separation of church and state? Give us a call, 410-662-8780, to be part of this edition of Living Questions here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Stick around.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's Living Questions here on Midday, our monthly series in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. Today, we're talking about prison ministries. My guests who join me here in Studio A this afternoon are Pastor Susan Beck of the Shepherd of the Glen Church in Glenwood and Pastor Gary Rickle, the pastor of a Lutheran community in Maryland prisons called St. Dismas. And on the line from Washington, D.C., Dr. Jerome Kapolsky. He's a religious studies scholar in residence at American University. You are welcome to join our conversations about ministries in prison. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. If you want to send us a tweet, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. If you want to drop us an email, you can find us midday@wipr.org. So, Gary Rickle, the services you offer, the worship services, are different than pastoral counseling, for example. Are the worship services part of a smorgasbord, a buffet of religious opportunities that the inmates have, or is it relegated just to worshiping?
They are very similar to the Lutheran services you would find in congregations on Sunday morning in Lutheran churches. Sure, we tweak them a little bit considering the circumstances, make a few changes here than there, but for the most part, they are very, very Lutheran. We put a lot of emphasis on forgiveness and absolution, as Susan said. Then there's the service of the word where we hear the lessons and have a sermon, and then it ends with the meal, the bread, and we can't take wine in, but grape juice. So in that hour, it's very much a Lutheran service. And I make that point when I visit Lutheran congregations that what we do in prison is the same thing we do here.
But are you, in addition, then offering any pastoral counseling, any services outside of the worship experience?
The Department of Corrections of the State of Maryland will only allow us to do worship services. I cannot go in to do counseling or mentoring or interaction any other time except to do worship.
Do you get to? Is it the same crowd that shows up in each facility? Is it the same group of men and the same group of women?
As you can imagine, there's change because, thank goodness, people get out. I make the joke, but it's a true joke. I have the only congregation in the world I want people to leave. And so any of the ones that I started this 5.5 years ago, there's no one who was there when I started. They've all been released.
And Reverend Susan Beck, your experience in these interfaith services with Rabbi Tobesman, I mean, do you, after you go a few times, do you get to know the congregants? I mean, do you get to know the folks who are coming to these services? Is it pretty much the same crowd from one time to the next?
Oh, absolutely. And we've had one interfaith service. We hope to do that again. The services I usually do are the Wednesday evening Lutheran services. But, oh, absolutely. It is a real congregation, even though it's not technically called a congregation. It's called a community. The men there form a group that is self-supporting. They invite each other to come to worship. They make sure that each other knows, you know, it's getting close to 7 o'clock, it's time to go. So absolutely, there's cohesiveness and relationships that form. And there's strength in that we hope will help them when they get out. When they do get out into the world, they can build on that foundation of strength and those relationships that they formed within that. Within that true congregation that was made.
And Jerome Kapolsky, your interaction with the inmates is a little bit different. You're not leading a worship service. You're teaching a class. How often does the class or did the class meet?
My class has met once a week for about 3 hours. And over the course of a semester.
Of semester. So 12 weeks, 14 weeks, something like that?
14 weeks. It was a normal college class. It was the normal syllabus that I would use if this were at the main campus. The same books, the same requirements, examinations. And
so obviously, if you're teaching a class, you're seeing these gentlemen and these women for 3 hours every single week. You do get to know them, I would imagine, perhaps in a way that a pastor leading a worship service may not. I mean, did you find that you got to know the histories, the stories of how these inmates ended up being incarcerated and the influences and the experiences in their lives that led them to your class?
You know, indirectly. You know, my job in this program was to be a professor, not to engage them directly on what brought them there and what they were doing there. But those issues and their stories and their background certainly came up, but they came up within the context of our conversations about the texts we were reading, the texts of the Bible. They didn't come out directly, but their own, in a way, their own comments and engagements with the texts were informed by their backgrounds.
Reverend Rickle, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State filed a lawsuit in which they prevailed about 13 years ago, saying that there was a particular program called Interchange Freedom Initiative, which was run in Iowa prisons. And the inmates who participated in this program, they were housed in a separate prison unit. They were immersed in a 24-hour-a-day Christ-centered program that was Bible-based. The training and the discussions were conducted by employees of this group, this Interchange Freedom Initiative, which was part of the Prison Fellowship Ministries that Chuck Colson very famously began when he was an aide to Richard Nixon, and when he went to prison for his role in the Watergate scandal, became born again. And the court ruled in 2006 that the program violated the Establishment Clause, that the fact that these inmates receive somewhat special treatment because they were involved in a religious program was something that the court said was unconstitutional. Does that issue come up in the work that you're doing?
No, it does not. And I would think the state of Maryland is very cautious in these matters, that if you can show that you are part of a religion and that you have 8 members, you are allowed to have space and time. For instance, next to the Lutheran services on Saturday evening, there's Wicca services, there's Jehovah's Witness services. And so once again, a segment of the population has proved that they are a religious institution, so the state is required to allow them to have space and time.
So they are, they do have options for which services they can attend.
Yes,
it doesn't have to be a Christian-based service.
Yes, mm-hmm. And they have to go through the chaplain's office.
Doug joins us on the line from South Carolina. Welcome to Midday. Where in South Carolina are you calling from, Doug?
I'm calling from Bluffton, South Carolina.
Well, welcome from Baltimore to Bluffton.
I appreciate your programming today. It's an interesting area and one that's very important, as there are many people concerned about the opening opportunities for those we've chosen to punish and put in prison as they reenter society. I happen to know Gary and have had some discussions, but a lot not said, and you actually covered the separatist church and state issues very well, so my question's sort of not necessary anymore, but over my life I've known three different flavors of folks who've gone into prisons, one coming from the Chuck Colson perspective, a former prisoner, a man who had gone through down the path, one being sort of an evangelical, non-denominational, one being a more traditional faith, Christian faith, as Gary would represent. But my question was, and Gary just answered it in part, is who screens, who determines the legitimacy of groups that are banging on the door with the belief that they need to get inside to help the folks inside, or conversely, the folks on the inside who feel a need, the prisoners, that is, on the inside of the wall, who may feel a need for a particular tradition. And I'm just curious whether there's any data or sense of does it come from the outside, or do prison inmates themselves generate an interest amongst themselves?
Well, Doug, thank you. We're running out of time, so I'm going to let Gary answer. I mean, first, who decides who goes in and who pays for it?
Who pays for it? Well, in this case, the Lutheran Church pays for it. The chaplain's office, each institution has a chaplain, and it goes through them in order to establish the services. And as I said earlier, you have to have 8 people requesting it before it's established. A year ago, we had 3 institutions where there were Lutheran services. Now there are 5, and that's all because inmates were transferred to other facilities and advocated for Lutheran services.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Susan Beck and Gary Rickle, thank you so much. And Jerome Kapolsky from Washington, I appreciate your time to all three of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate being here.
My pleasure.
Pastor Susan Beck of the Shepherd of the Glen Church in Glenwood and Pastor Gary Rickle, the pastor of a Lutheran community in Maryland prisons, is called St. Dismas. Jerome Kapolsky joined us from American University, where he's a scholar in residence. This has been another edition of Living Questions. It's a monthly feature here on Midday. We're producing this series in conjunction with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. You can listen to this conversation and all of our discussions in the Living Questions series online. Come on over to wipr.org/livingquestions. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today for our guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner, with breakfast served on the weekends. They can be found on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, our regular feature on issues in medical ethics with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn, the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. Until then, for the entire Midday team, I'm Tom Hall. We appreciate your listening. We appreciate your calls and tweets and emails. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.